My guest today is Alfred Turek, who worked at the V&O Press Company in Greenport, New York, outside of Hudson. Al, can you tell me a little bit about the V&O Press Company and what it manufactured?
Well, it manufactured punch presses. And it was a great place to work. And everybody that worked there, it was like a family. Some guys were in other fellows' weddings, and some were godfathers to their children. And if you left your wallet laying down overnight, it was there in the morning. It was just a wonderful group, and it was a pleasure to go to work. And it was interesting, the things that they manufactured and the processes that they went through with the machinery and everything was just an interesting place to work.
Now, you said it manufactured presses. Maybe you can explain a little bit.
Well, it manufactured a punch press by means of machining parts that came from foundries, castings, and steel. And things were turned on a lathe. They were machined on a milling machine. The big press bodies were machined on boring mills. And eventually all these little parts came down the line, went through inspection to the finished stores, and then it came out in the assembly, which I was connected with. And at assembly, all these things were hand-fitted and put together and tested and eventually got skidded and went out the door.
Were these presses sold to all different types of industries and companies?
Very much so. In those days, just about everything was made out of metal, and the press was a basic tool for forming metal. And I believe probably with the introduction of plastics, kind of was the beginning of the downfall of the press industry. Electric companies such as like Westinghouse and General Electric were important customers because they were interested in our punch press that put the notches in laminations for electric motors. And General Dynamics was a great user of notching presses for submarines because everything in a submarine was operated with an electric motor, and the laminations were all part of the motor and part of our business.
What were, or what, did you held different positions at V&O?
Well, I started in 1959 as a sweeper. And after a few months, I bid on a job in a bench room that was just taking burrs off of parts that are coming through the shop and reaming holes to plug gauge fits and whatever. And then a job in assembly came up, and I bid on that, and that was the beginning of my career. I spent the rest of my years in the assembly putting these things together.
Were the wages good for the time? I mean,
the wages were equal to most industries in the area. It was, I would say it was fair at that time when a loaf of bread was 15 cents and you could go in a grocery store and have three big bags of groceries for $12. So.
Was it like, would you be paid every week?
Yep.
By check or by cash?
By check.
And when was payday? Was it,
you know? Payday was on a Thursday, I believe.
Oh.
And the paymaster would come around through the shop, and everyone would just get in line and go over to her and receive their check. And a lot of times at noontime, they would rush out the door to go to the closest bank to cash their check. And then there was a couple of people there that had a lot of money in their pocket. They would cash the check for them for a quarter.
That's funny. But it must have been, I wonder if Thursday night was busy in Hudson after all these people got coming in.
It was probably the shopping night. I think all the stores stayed open till 9 o'clock. And at that time, everything was on Warren Street, just about. You didn't have no big box stores or anything. They had each thing was individual, the shoe store and the hardware store, the drug store. Everything was up and down both sides of Warren Street, basically.
I had a question. How did you get the job?
Well, after graduating from high school, I bounced around from paper mills to distilleries, custodian. I was a janitor for a while during my high school years at the junior high. And then I became an iron worker for a while. And when things slowed down in the winter months on construction, I put applications in cement plants and machine shops in the area. And I was trying to get a job with Niagara Mohawk. And each time I went to the office, they told me that I had to take a physical, and they would let me know if anything happened within 30 days. And apparently nothing happened. After 30 days, I had to go take another physical. I waited another 30 days. And every time I approached their office, nothing happened yet. So when I talked to the personnel manager at the V&O, he told me that there would be an opening. So I got a call from him one day that he would like to see me. So I said, will you just give me another half an hour? And I went to the Niagara Mohawk office for the last time. And when they told me nothing happened yet, the job didn't break, I went back to the V&O and I told them I would be interested in taking a job. So I started the day after Labor Day in 1959 and was connected with that for probably 28 years until bankruptcy. And then I worked another 13 years for Heinz Grosjehan, who took over the assets of the V&O. And right now I'm still connected with the business that is relocated back in Greenport in the old Laura Brook building.
And that's down at off of 66?
That's right behind where the old original V&O building was.
Oh. There's still presses there.
There's still presses and there's still manufacturing presses on a smaller scale.
That's great. So it still lives on.
Still lives on.
And you do. You must be the expert when they need a little help.
Well, I do get quite a few phone calls whenever they have problems. And I try to help them out as much as I can.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about Hudson, you know, going into Hudson. Maybe you could tell me what it was like growing up. You grew up in Hudson.
Well, I grew up down in the lower end of Hudson on the north end. And I spent most of my time down at the river in the North Dock area. And I acquired an old flat-bottom rowboat that was left out over the winter and survived the ice. And drug it home, patched it up, painted it up, and I just started like Tom Sawyer. I was out on the water every chance I could get. And it was a part of Hudson that it was almost like country living. There was no sidewalk or anything, but off of the street was picket fences and white houses and lined with trees. But it was just a short distance up over the hill, and you were on State Street, 2nd Street, and a short walk to school, a short walk to the Five and Dime stores, which at that time was a treat to take a walk uptown and go through and look at the toys. And Christmas time, Rogerson's had the electric train set up. We used to stand there and watch that go around for hours.
Now, you lived on what street?
Mill Street, which no longer exists. It's all part of the Urban Renewal Project.
But where would it be? Let's say, where would it have been before all that?
It started on North Front Street, and it went parallel to State Street, and it came out down by Foster's refrigerator that would be on North 2nd Street. And the portion of the street that I lived on, which no longer exists, would be behind Town and Country, the meat store.
That still is. Yeah, I know where it is.
So if you look at the front of their building, right behind it where their parking lot is where our houses were.
But that's sort of countryish. I mean, I've been down there. There's people behind there. There's still little houses around there with little yards and gardens out
that's,
in there.
That's a little bit down further.
Yeah,
that's
but,
toward the end of 2nd Street. That's still about the same down there.
But it was right just a few paces to the river, to your boat.
Yep.
So it was fun. It was fun. You could be out there and feel like I'm in the country, and then you could go up the hill, and then there you're in town.
I had a little bicycle trail that took me down there, and from my house, it took me about 5 minutes to get to the river. And, of course, by hanging around on the river, on the old North Dock, then I got interested in building a shanty down there, so I built a shanty out on the end of the catwalk, and it became part of the little village down there. And eventually the sewer plant came along, and the city sewer no longer emptied into the creek, which kept the water from freezing in front of my shanty. So the first year that the sewer plant was in operation, the bay froze and my front porch went up in the air with the ice. So after repairing it, I put in one more season, and it happened again the following winter, and I just moved everything out of it and let it fall down to nature. And then I took over my father's shanty, which was on the mainland. And I was there until we were evicted by the city of Hudson. And I still go down there every Sunday and just look around and remember the good old days and the fun that we had growing up down there. And now and then I do bump into one of the old buddies and something to talk about.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Al, for inviting me to your beautiful home and meeting your wife, Joan. A beautiful day today. And it was great looking at the pictures, of course, and looking at the correspondence and the history of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
Again, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.